Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You could use the shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, France 24, Radio Havana Cuba, and NHK World Radio Japan. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The Trump-Netanyahu suggestion that Palestinians leave Gaza and the U.S. rebuild it into a luxury resort town sent shockwaves around the world. We'll hear news on the reaction in Palestine and an interview with Mustafa Bargoti, a Palestinian physician and member of the Palestinian Legislative Council. He says that the proposal is a distraction and criminal. He says the U.S. has no credibility when trying to act as a mediator between Israel and Palestine. Radio Deutsche Welle.
Israel says it has begun preparation for the departure of large numbers of Palestinians from the Gaza Strip, just a day after U.S. President Donald Trump suggested that the U.S. take over Gaza. Trump's comments have been condemned and rejected by international leaders, with the U.N. Secretary General warning against ethnic cleansing in the Strip.
U.S. President Donald Trump's proposal to clear Gaza of its civilians is strongly rejected by Gazans themselves.
We want to make it clear to Trump and to global leaders, the Palestinian people are rooted in their land. We are as firm as the roots of olive trees. We will never give up our land in Gaza, nor will we abandon our land in the West Bank.
Trump proposed that the United States take over Gaza and resettle the over 2 million Palestinians living there. He sparked immediate international condemnation.
In the search for solutions, we must not make the problem worse. It is vital to stay true to the bedrock of international law. It is essential to avoid any form of ethnic cleansing.
The proposal to resettle Gazans was also spurned by neighboring countries, Jordan and Egypt, which Trump had previously suggested should welcome them in. But the idea did find favor with Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
The actual idea of allowing first Gazans who want to leave to leave. I mean, what's wrong with that? They can leave, they can then come back, they can relocate and come back, but you have to rebuild Gaza. If you want to rebuild Gaza, you can't have... This is the first good idea that I've heard. It's a remarkable idea.
As the diplomatic furore continues, the White House appears to be contradicting Trump's intentions to resettle Gazans permanently.
And the president has made it clear that they need to be temporarily relocated out of Gaza for the rebuilding of this effort. Again, it's a demolition site right now. It's not a livable place for any human being.
This dissonance is adding to the confusion over Trump's intentions for U.S. involvement in the Middle East.
Mustafa Bargoti is a Palestinian politician, a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council. He joins us now. What do you think about the Trump proposal?
I think Trump's proposal is not only destructive, but also criminal, because what he has called for is nothing but ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people in Gaza. And then he's calling for an act of theft, where United States want to take over the land of Gaza at no cost, of course. And probably he's also dreaming and thinking about the gas field in Gaza, which is worth about $54 billion. This is terrible. And when they speak, he and Netanyahu, about the difficulty of living in Gaza, they should ask themselves, who destroyed Gaza? With which weapons Gaza was destroyed? Gaza was destroyed by the Israeli army, which used 86,000 tons of American explosives in the most inhuman way, killing at least 17,000 children and tens of thousands of other Palestinians. They have no right to decide for us what we want. We will reconstruct Gaza even with the most simple ways, without their intervention. And with Palestinians will never leave their country because they've already tried that before in 1948 when Israel ethnically cleansed 70% of the Palestinian people. They were never allowed back. Netanyahu is telling lies when he speaks about allowing Palestinians to come back. He's restricting even our movement now in the West Bank with 920 military checkpoints. This whole thing is nothing but an act of ethnic cleansing that Netanyahu tried to conduct with bombardment and failed. And now President Trump is coming with this, with these political ideas that are very dangerous and that are rejected not only by Palestinians, but by all countries in the region and by the world.
So you are saying that the proposal by Benjamin Netanyahu to allow Gazans to leave, those who want to leave, and allow them back in if they want to come back in, you don't believe that proposal?
I don't believe he means it. I think he wants people to leave and not come back because he has made it clear that he will control the borders. He has nothing to do with the people of Gaza. He should leave Gaza. The Israeli army has destroyed already most of the buildings in Gaza. They should leave and let us be. If Israel really cares about the human lives, why they are obstructing humanitarian aid to the people of Gaza? We have medical teams in Gaza that lack medications, lack medical equipment. He's not allowing them in. He's not even allowing aid equipment to the injured people. He is obstructing everything. So I'm sorry to say that, but the Prime Minister of Israel is a frequent liar, a pathological liar, and he's lying again.
Now, how do you see the role of the U.S. in the peace process in the Middle East right now? Is it still a believable mediator?
Unfortunately, it couldn't be a mediator even during Biden's time. And of course, it cannot be the mediator now with all this bias to Israel. To be a mediator, you have to be impartial, to be not totally neutral, but at least somehow neutral. The United States is the biggest supporter of Israel, politically and with arms and with technology and with everything. So no, of course, the United States cannot play that role. President Trump did something, one thing good, which was to pressure Netanyahu to stop the attacks on Gaza. That should continue. He's the only one who can restrain Netanyahu from going back to bombarding Gaza and from going back to war. And that role should continue. But if we talk about a solution of the problem, we need the whole international community. And the best idea is to have some kind of an international peace conference where Europeans would be involved, Arab countries would be involved, Muslim countries would be involved, and the United Nations in particular. And the big question here is why nothing has been done to end the problem by ending the Israeli military occupation of Palestinian land and allowing Palestinians to have a state, a small state of their own, that could so that we can have peaceful coexistence. Mm. What we had so far is nothing but occupation, oppression, an occupation that transformed into a system of terrible apartheid. And you have seen what happened in Gaza, and now what happened in Gaza is happening in the West Bank, where two big refugee camps have already been ethnically cleansed, including in the one in Jenin and the one in Tul Karim. And the attacks are continuing. Hamas does not exist in the West Bank, but they are conducting a war on the people, on the civilian population of the people of the West Bank, even using airstrikes against Palestinian cities there.
That interview is from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. DW is also available at most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. Next, France 24. The Middle Eastern and U.S. press focused on the Trump-Netanyahu-Gaza proposal. Then the U.S. tariff wars with Mexico, Canada, and China also took center stage in the international press. Then a piece on how accurate is the claim that Mexico produces fentanyl and that significant amounts of the drug enter the U.S. from Canada. France 24.
Leah, we're going to go back to our top story to start with. That news, the U.S. President Donald Trump is saying he wants the U.S. to take over the Gaza Strip. How is that being covered by the papers? Let's start with the Middle East.
Well, I'll start with Al Akbar Eve, which is a Lebanese paper with close ties to Hezbollah. After announcing his intention to clean out Gaza a few days ago, the U.S. president is persisting, opening a new chapter in the war, according to the paper's front page. They refer to the maximum pressure being applied by Washington to encourage the displacement of Gazans. Al Had, which is a Jordanian daily, describes Donald Trump's statements as a total surprise, especially when he says that he's considering transforming Gaza into a Middle Eastern Riviera. This is the Middle East Eye, which is a London-based but Qatari-backed newspaper. They report that Jordan is ready to declare war on Israel in the event that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu attempts to forcibly expel Palestinians into its territory. It comes after Trump said that he would like to see Jordan and Egypt take in Palestinians. There's a similar tone in Arab News, which is a Saudi-backed publication. The Saudi foreign minister reiterating their position that Palestinians must have their own independent state, and that was not open to negotiation. Ashaq Al-Awsat, another Saudi daily, has this, saying they're not surprised by his statements insofar as Trump indicated as soon as he arrived in the White House that he would soon take over Panama, then Canada, and the rest would follow. The paper says that for Trump, the planet is nothing but real estate, countries, homelands, and historical identities being nothing but a myth for the US president.
So what are reactions like in the United States?
Well, this is the Washington Post. They tell us that once the Palestinians are evicted, Trump said that he loves the idea of the US owning the Gaza Strip. According to this, the sun will never set on Trump's colonial empire, Greenland, Panama, Canada, and now, of course, Gaza as well. This article ends with Trump's comment that he thinks that the potential in the Gaza Strip is unbelievable, just not for Palestinians, this piece points out. In Israel, Haaretz talk of Netanyahu being handed a political lifeline. The PM can return to Israel with credibility that he can dangle in front of his far-right coalition partners. This piece also points out the irony of Trump talking about Gaza having become hell while standing next to Netanyahu. It begs the question, who exactly does Trump think that made every building in Gaza uninhabitable and therefore responsible for the required displacement? Sticking in Israel with the Jerusalem Post, they report that Trump told the paper that Jordan and Egypt won't tell him no when they're asked to house refugees, despite the fact that both countries have made it very clear that they won't be doing so. I'll finish with Ynet, which is Israel's most read news site. They report that actually this plan from Trump isn't new. Senior Israeli officials have been considering a plan to encourage migration of Gazans to a third country for months. But according to this, that third country is neither Egypt nor Jordan.
Start with the so-called tariff war between the US, Canada and Mexico. How's that being covered?
I'll start in the US with this New York Times opinion piece aiming at Mexico, hitting ourselves. This article claims that the tariffs are so badly misconceived that they may achieve the opposite of the president's stated goals. There are three main reasons why, according to this piece: prices heading up, US manufacturers suffering, and the fact that economic pain can spur migration. As life in Mexico gets less pleasant because of the tariffs, moving to the United States may become more attractive. The Wall Street Journal call it the dumbest trade war in history, saying that Trump's justification for this economic assault on the neighbours makes no sense. One of the president's main justifications for these tariffs was to stop the import of the illegal drug of fentanyl. This piece says that these new measures won't make a difference in that regard. Drugs have flowed into the US for decades and will continue to do so as long as Americans keep using them.
And what about across the border, starting with, say, in Canada? What's the story there?
Fair to say that the news has not gone down well with the general public. As you can see in the Washington Post, the US national anthem was booed at several sports events on Sunday. Of course, the Canadian government have responded. This is the front page of the Toronto Star, one of Canada's biggest newspapers. Canada hits back, reporting that PM Justin Trudeau has responded with tariffs on $155 billion worth of products from the US. The National Post have this opinion piece, which actually comes from Danielle Smith, who's the premier of Alberta. She says Canada can overcome Trump's tariffs. She's called on the country to come together to build multiple oil and gas pipelines in all directions, while also lowering taxes and tearing down interprovincial trade barriers. They'll go south to Mexico to finish with El Universal. They have that photo of Justin Trudeau in this article this morning, with the headline reading, "Trudeau, brother, you're already Mexican," with calls for Canadian brands to be consumed in the wake of the tariffs. It's a little bit tongue in cheek, but there is some seriousness to the suggestion that Mexicans should reject Coca-Cola and Starbucks and start consuming Canadian stalwarts such as Tim Hortons in order to stick it to Donald Trump.
When Donald Trump announced tariffs on Canada, Mexico and China, he said the move is partly to stop illegal fentanyl from flowing into the United States. But just how big a role do these three countries play in the opioid entering the US? According to the US Drug Enforcement Administration, China is the primary source of the substance trafficked internationally. Following a crackdown by US and Chinese authorities on traffickers in recent years, much of that flow has allegedly been rerouted through cartels in Mexico. Authorities say rather than shipping fentanyl directly to the US, Chinese drug traffickers send precursor chemicals to Mexico, where they can then be turned into fentanyl before being sent on to the US. But Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum has repeatedly said that authorities have found no proof that fentanyl is being produced in her country. Trump has also called Canada a big player in the fentanyl trade. However, in 2022, a commission established by Congress found that Canada is not known to be a major source of fentanyl or precursor chemicals to the US. In 2024, US border agents seized around 19 kilograms of fentanyl at the northern border, compared with almost 9,600 kilograms at the border with Mexico.
Those press reviews and report were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, and most podcast sites. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. A senator from Connecticut said that the Gaza proposal was done to distract the press from covering the billionaires stealing money from the U.S. citizens. The Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor has warned of the terrible humanitarian situation in Gaza. Major demonstrations have been taking place across the U.S. against assaults on immigrant communities. The Trump administration has called for aggressive enforcement of new definitions of anti-Semitism on college campuses. Radio Havana, Cuba.
One Democratic senator from Connecticut, Chris Murphy, said, "I have news for you. We're not taking over Gaza. But the media will focus on it for a few days. Trump will then have succeeded in distracting everyone from the real story, the billionaires seizing government to steal from regular people." Trump's extraordinary proposal for the Gaza Strip is all but certain to be a source of conflict in the next round of negotiations to extend the fragile ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Trump has reportedly taken credit for the ceasefire deal, which came into effect on January the 19th, the day before he took office. He blamed the foreign policy of his predecessor, Joe Biden, for allowing the war in Gaza to begin in the first place. Trump has also cast doubts on the strength of the ceasefire, whether it would last. He said the strikes, the airstrikes by Israel, could start again tomorrow. There's not really a whole lot to strike. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor has warned of a grim humanitarian situation in war-wracked Gaza Strip, highlighting the urgent needs of 2 million residents as the crisis intensifies 16 days into the ceasefire. Rami Abdou, the founder and chairman of the Euro-Med Human Rights Monitor, in a series of tweets on Tuesday, said the humanitarian situation in Gaza has reached alarming levels, with reports indicating that aid remains severely disrupted by Israel and critical needs remain unmet. Abdou wrote that Gaza's infrastructure has been left in ruins and essential supplies, including fuel tanks, tents, and medical equipment, are still being blocked. Only 9,000 tents, small and in poor quality, have arrived in Gaza, while 120,000 are urgently needed. Hundreds of thousands remain without shelter. Since the ceasefire, only 8,500 aid trucks have entered Gaza, yet only 35% reached the north, where needs are most urgent. Instead of food and medicine, many trucks carry non-essential goods for merchants. Gaza needs 1,000 trucks per day, but rarely half of that gets through. The chief of the human rights group also warned that the humanitarian situation is exacerbated by the destruction of 85% of Gaza's water wells, with Israel blocking supplies necessary for repairs. 100 wells in northern Gaza urgently need repair, but not a single one has been restored. People are forced to drink contaminated water while aid is being delayed. This is nothing more than collective punishment. Well, major demonstrations have been taking place across the United States in recent days to protest the Trump administration's assault on immigrant communities. In Los Angeles, in California, thousands of protesters rallied into the night, defying heavy police presence. A group of demonstrators shut down the 101 freeway that runs through downtown Los Angeles. In Atlanta, the capital of Georgia, thousands marched along the Buford Highway over this past couple of days after the ICE announced targeted operations in the city of Atlanta. Tensions over Israel's genocidal war in Gaza have led to numerous demonstrations across U.S. campuses, including a wave of pro-Palestinian encampments that led to about 3,200 arrests last year. Harvard University adopted a controversial definition of anti-Semitism just one day after the inauguration of President Donald Trump in a move to muzzle pro-Palestinian voices on the campus. The student demonstrators have called upon their respective universities to sever ties with the Israeli regime in a collective effort to hold the regime and its Western backers accountable for their heinous crimes of genocide in Palestine. Joe Biden's administration came under fire from Republicans for its so-called toothless treatment of the anti-Israeli protest. Republicans threatened the demonstrators with real accountability from the incoming Trump administration. President Donald Trump has signed an executive order calling for aggressive action to fight so-called anti-Semitism on college campuses and has promised to prosecute offenders and revoke visas for international students found to be what they are calling Hamas sympathizers.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. There's no podcast, however. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific time. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program, there's a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show in the airwaves. Please join in the fun. And if you're listening on a public radio station, they will soon have an even greater need for your support as well. We'll conclude with NHK Japan. China is unhappy about the new tariff on their goods. Trump warned BRICS nations against creating their new currency. Ukraine President Zelensky would like some nuclear weapons. NHK World Radio Japan.
Officials in Beijing are slamming the United States for starting a trade war, but they're also expressing hope for settling their issues through dialogue. U.S. President Donald Trump imposed a new 10% tariff on Chinese imports on Tuesday. China is striking back, announcing additional levies on U.S. goods, including coal and liquefied natural gas, starting next Monday. A foreign ministry spokesperson told reporters the measures are necessary to safeguard China's legitimate rights and interests.
There are no winners in trade and tariff wars, and pressure and threats will not work against China.
He also says now is not the time for more tariffs. He says both countries should engage in equal-footed and mutually respectful negotiations. The White House says Trump plans to discuss the matter with Chinese President Xi Jinping very soon. Beijing's spokesperson made no mention of when that'll happen.
On Thursday, Trump warned on social media that China, Russia, and other BRICS emerging economies will be hit with tariffs if they move away from the dollar. He wrote he's going to require a commitment from BRICS members that they will not create a new currency or back any other currency to replace the dollar, or they will face 100% tariffs.
Ukraine's president says his country needs nuclear weapons and other kinds of military support. He says they're necessary for protection against Russia until NATO accepts Ukraine into the alliance. Volodymyr Zelensky said that to a British journalist in an interview released Tuesday. He had been asked how Ukraine would protect itself if the process of joining NATO were to go on for years. Zelensky said the country should be given back nuclear arms. He added he wants his partners to provide missile systems and financial assistance for 1 million military members. Nuclear weapons were deployed in Ukraine during the former Soviet era. Zelensky has been pushing for membership amid the Russian invasion. NATO leaders have promised to keep supporting Ukraine. They say it's closer to NATO than ever before, and it will join eventually.
Those reports are from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They are heard at 9 p.m. at 13710 or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK may also be found at most podcast sites. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for the show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recuperating from spinal injuries and staying in a house connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.